Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into something really fascinating and, I have to say, a little bit alarming. It's a high-profile report that came out of China's Xinhua Institute back in September 2025. And the title, well, the title says it all, really. Colonization of the Mind, the Means, Roots, and Global Perils of U.S. Cognitive Warfare. So our mission today is to unpack how this one document systematically redefines almost every standard U.S. outreach effort you can think of. We're talking State Department messaging, international scholarships, even Hollywood movies, all of it framed as a form of hostile military operation.
I mean, just think about that for a second. How can something like a Fulbright scholarship, a student exchange, be officially classified as a capability in a cognitive war?
That is exactly the question. And this document, it's designed not so much to answer it as, you know, just shut the debate down entirely. Yeah. Have to understand, this isn't some neutral academic paper.
No. This is what you'd call a flagship narrative product. It's a strategic move by Beijing to create one single unified story. And in that story, the entire spectrum of U.S. information activity, from, you know, open diplomacy to covert ops, it's all just one big aggressive campaign.
A campaign of mind colonization.
Precisely. And by creating this very specific vocabulary, it lets China and its allies treat Western culture not as dialogue or soft power, but as, well, hostile capabilities that need to be fought.
That reframing is just... It has massive implications. And the report does this using a very specific tool, a kind of typology.
Right, this three-tier system.
Yeah, it labels everything as white, gray, or black propaganda. Yeah. Let's start with white, because that's where the definition is, frankly, shocking.
It is. This is the category for traditional overt U.S. public diplomacy.
The public face of America.
Exactly. The smiling face, the cultural grants, the public statements. The report puts it all under white propaganda.
So what specifically are they including there?
Okay, so you have the obvious things, like... public-facing messages from the State Department. Then there's U.S. government broadcasting, so Voice of America, all the USAGM outlets.
Standard stuff.
But then they sweep in all these key cultural and educational programs. This is where you find Fulbright, for instance.
Right.
And even just the huge global reach of American pop culture. Hollywood is in there, American music. All of it is lumped together as ideological weaponry.
So why call it propaganda if the source is completely transparent? I mean, usually that word implies there's some kind of deception going on.
Well, the report's argument is that even if the source is open, the intent is hostile.
The intent.
Their logic is that all these activities, they openly push an idealized image of the United States, the American model. Mm. And they say that encourages other societies to copy it. In Beijing's worldview, that is ideological subversion. It's a form of mental control aimed at undermining local political systems.
So it's an attack on their cultural sovereignty. That's a very powerful narrative.
Yeah.
Okay, so take us through the rest of the schema. How do gray and black fit into this?
So the gray zone, that's reserved for groups that have some distance from the official U.S. government.
Arm's length.
Arm's length, exactly. They point directly at quasi-governmental groups, NGOs. The report explicitly names the National Endowment for Democracy, the NED, the National Democratic Institute, NDI, and Freedom House.
And how are they framed?
They're framed as operational tools, basically. Instruments for orchestrating political instability around the world. The report links them directly to the color revolutions in post-Soviet states, the Arab Spring, the Hong Kong protests.
So democracy promotion is just another word for destabilization.
In this document, yes. And then finally you get to the black propaganda category.
The traditional covert stuff.
That's right. The clandestine core. This is all tied to intelligence-led info ops. They cite older examples like the CIA's Operation Mockingbird and newer things like the PRISM surveillance program. And this category is key because it sort of proves the U.S. has the capability for this high-level manipulation, which then makes you view the white and gray stuff with, you know, maximum suspicion.
Okay, and this is where it gets really, really interesting for anyone who follows information warfare. In Western doctrine, that white, gray, black coding is just a technical label, right? It's about how truthful the content is and whether you can identify the source.
Exactly. White is overt and true. Gray is murky source or content. Black is a concealed source and false content. It's a functional definition.
But the Xinhua report just throws that out.
Completely. It uses the color coding to build a moral argument.
A moral one.
Yes. They're basically saying there's no difference in intent between a Fulbright scholarship and a covert CIA operation. It's all part of one big malign cognitive warfare enterprise.
That is the core of the whole thing. And the language they use to make this point internationally is very deliberate.
It's incredibly deliberate. We looked at the original Chinese and the term they use, Suanchuan. It can be pretty neutral.
What does it mean?
It can just mean public messaging or promotion or even just communication. It doesn't always have a negative feel.
Okay.
But the English translation, which is the version they're pushing globally, intentionally uses the phrase white propaganda.
Mm.
And in English, the word propaganda, it just lands differently. It immediately suggests deception, manipulation.
So it's a loaded term. They're translating a soft Chinese word into a hard, pejorative English one to frame the argument before it even begins. That's a clever linguistic move.
It's a very clever setup, and it lets them pivot right to their next point, the strategic lumping of everything together. By tying a Fulbright scholarship directly to something like a clandestine NSA program, they create this seamless story of mental colonization.
And it suggests there's no such thing as an innocent cultural exchange. It's all just espionage for the mind.
Exactly. But to make that stick, they have to argue it's not a new thing.
Right. It has to be a historical conspiracy.
Precisely. They assert what they call a historical malign intent. The report frames all U.S. information power as this integrated century-long campaign. They trace it all the way back to the Monroe Doctrine, through the Cold War, right up to today. The argument is that Washington has always been trying to colonize minds.
And how do they back that up?
With very carefully curated evidence and strategic citations. And this is the brilliant part. They don't just quote critics of the U.S. They selectively quote influential Western political theorists. But they frame the quotes as if these thinkers are confessing to a grand strategy of domination.
Can you give us an example of that?
A great one is how they use Hans Morgenthau, the classical realist.
Right.
They pull a quote from him where he says, "The conquest and control of the minds of men is the highest form of imperialism."
Wow.
And when you drop that quote into this report, it sounds like he's admitting that's the U.S. government's ultimate goal.
So they're twisting the meaning.
They're completely recontextualizing it. They do the same thing with Joseph Nye, the guy who came up with the term soft power. They use his work on shaping the political environment as proof of a strategy to weaken foreign governments from the inside.
So they're taking Western academic debates about power and influence
and repurposing them as confessions, as proof of a centralized, hostile military strategy. It's what makes this a system product.
What do you mean by that? A system product?
It means it's built from a hybrid research base. You have Western policy discourse, but it's all seen through the ideological lens of the Chinese Communist Party. It pulls in commentary from Chinese and, interestingly, Russian political scientists, especially on the topic of color revolutions.
So it's got international backing.
Right. And then crucially, it has input from China's own defense and intelligence-linked institutions. We're talking about the PLA Academy of Military Sciences, their top military think tank, and CICIR, which is a major intelligence-linked body. That gives the report an official authoritative weight.
Okay, let's shift gears a little. This isn't just an academic exercise. This report is designed to be used. It's meant to provide ideological cover. So who is this for? Who are the main audiences Beijing is trying to reach here?
There are two big ones. The first, and maybe the most obvious, is the Global South. You see, the report was unveiled at the Global South Media and Think Tank Forum. The language is tailor-made to appeal to post-colonial nations.
How so?
It uses phrases like break the shackles on thinking, escape ideological shackles, and regain cultural confidence. Beijing is positioning itself as the champion of cognitive security. The message is very clear. America wants to colonize your mind, but China can help you achieve true independence.
That's a narrative that would resonate in a lot of places. What about the second audience? The one at home?
The second audience is domestic and military, specifically the People's Liberation Army, the PLA.
And what's the purpose there?
For them, this report is the perfect justification for China's own, you know, rapidly growing cognitive domain operations. The internal logic is really simple. If this authoritative report proves the U.S. has been waging this cognitive war for 100 years,
then anything China does is just self-defense.
It's overdue counter-colonial self-defense. It's not aggressive. It's a moral necessity.
And we're already seeing this being put into practice, right? This isn't just theory sitting on a shelf.
Not at all. The language from the report spread like wildfire across China's core security and propaganda channels. We saw it pop up on the Ministry of Public Security portal, which is for internal law enforcement, and most importantly, on China Military Online, the PLA's main public website.
So it's been cemented as official doctrine.
It's an official touchstone now for how to understand and define hostile threats.
So if we zoom out and look at the big picture, the real power of this document is that it's actively trying to reshape the information battlefield. It means any dissenting voice, an independent news outlet, an activist, a scholar, can now be officially branded by Beijing or its partners as an extension of foreign cognitive warfare.
It's the perfect ideological shield, and you as the listener need to know this isn't just staying inside China, it's being translated and pushed out globally. We've seen English, Burmese, Russian versions. It's being internalized by security elites everywhere, giving them a ready-made vocabulary to justify their own information controls against perceived Western colonization.
So to sum this all up, we've seen how one authoritative report, with the full backing of institutions like Xinhua and the PLA, uses linguistic framing, that strategic lumping too, to turn normal diplomatic tools into weapons of war. It basically just ends the debate by declaring everything hostile from the start.
And that leaves us with a final thought, something for you to consider.
If this reframing, this ideal of cognitive warfare, really gains traction globally, if other powerful nations start to adopt this same framework, what happens to our existing international norms? What about agreements around cultural exchange, freedom of the press, public broadcasting? Do they all become strategically vulnerable?
And think about how that might change how you see the world. The next time you come across a piece of information, a film, a news story, even a scholarship ad that seems perfectly benign, what steps might you take to ask yourself, is this just what it appears to be? Or is it being framed by powerful actors as part of a much larger systemic influence operation?